From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of March 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Dan O'Brien will join us from K-State Extension to talk about the agricultural energies. We'll also ask him just a little bit about not only ethanol, but crop insurance decisions and the wheat crop out in his part of the world and what that all means to acreage as it's related to corn and soybeans in the end of this month. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we'll do it all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day at 5:45. It settled 6¾ cents higher. July at 5:32¾, 5¾ cents higher. And December contract at 4.75¾, up 7 cents for the day. May soybeans gained 21¼, settled at $14.12½. The July at 13.98¾, up 17¾. And November beans 10½ cents higher, $12.29¾. Bean meal for the day at 4.21.70, up 3.40. The bean oil at 49.66, 43 cents higher. And wheat futures soft red up 16 cents at $6.66¼. The hard red at 6.27, up 12¾ cents. Live cattle futures, lead option April at 119.42½, 45 cents higher. The June at 25 cents higher, 117.75. And feeder cattle for the day at 136.52½, down 67½. And the March, the April at 140.47½, 65 cents lower. Lean hogs down $2.37½, and the April $85.35. The settlement price for the day. A quick look at some of the other markets. Gold futures up $12.10 on the day. We're joined now by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to discuss what happened in Chicago. Hey, thanks for being with us, Wayne.
Great to be here.
So, soybeans had a really good day. What drove them higher?
Well, you know, when we started early this morning when we came in, wheat was the only thing that was showing green, and the corn and the beans were down lower like that. We did see a little bit of a pop when the Japanese purchase was announced, sort of feeling that we got down to an area where there was value and support there like that. The wheat was up early on the crop ratings yesterday afternoon, where they decreased all of the crop ratings out west and, you know, made us, and the wheat market around the world is getting tighter that way also. So, but then you saw the funds come back in and buy here when a little later in the day, and they were pretty big buyers. So they started bringing this market on back, and they bought 3,000 wheat, 7,000 corn, and 10,000 beans today.
You think they'll continue to be in?
It looks like we closed and the way that we came back like this, technically it looks like that the funds will be around tomorrow to be buyers also.
So the month of March sometimes is a place where we tend to roll over, or there can be a change in the marketplace within the next week or so. Any fear in the market that that'll happen?
I think there can be lots of fear with this market at these levels and the funds at the levels they are at. I think that, you know, right now it sort of turns around and we're hearing about Mato Grosso, some of the more rain there, damaged beans coming out of there, and maybe not quite as good on some of the yields. And we are backing up a little bit that way. You know, one of the things right now, there's 19 million metric tons worth of boats waiting to load, which that would take about 45 days to load down at the Brazilian ports now. But they are picking up steam, and they're loading beans a little faster, and they're getting, you know, more harvest in there as they go along. And it does look like, you know, Michael Cordonnier did raise the Brazilian crop 2 million metric tons to 132 million metric tons. So it looks like there's going to be quite a few beans coming out of there. You know, the other thing is it's going to be now, can we keep the meal prices up and the crush good?
And can we?
Can we? It looks like we are pretty good here on that. You know, one of the problems we're having with some of the beans, and especially beans getting them out, is the container market. A lot of containers are going back empty because China is running out of containers to ship stuff to all the stuff that was backed up during the COVID time period. So some of those are hitting there that way. We'd like to see some more beans go out in containers.
Any early indication post Ag Forum what folks are thinking about next week's USDA WASDE report?
You know, a lot of questions on why we maybe didn't reduce the carryout a little more, but as being around a long time, Chinese sales until they're shipped shouldn't be thrown in the balance sheet. And I think that's what the USDA is being cautious about, that looking ahead. Did they overbuy some from us for the time period? They won't necessarily cancel them, but will they be rolled into next year's purchases? And I think that's one of the things that everybody's talking about. They'd like to see more the lower carryout, but I don't think it's time for the USDA to do that yet.
Yeah, that's just a week away. On Tuesday of next week, the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, you can find those on our website. On Tuesday morning, they're always released at 11 a.m. Central Time, noon in your time zone. Crop insurance, another date, is due on the 15th, the ARC PLC decision as well. I bet you're busy with that now.
You know, we're trying to talk to everybody. Look, we just got the figures, and you like to let the computers get settled in good, and so you can start running the numbers to know what they'll actually have, what they're doing. But yes, a lot of talk about whether they want to take the extra insurance for the enhanced coverage to take them up to 95%, seeing how many dollars that's going to cost, and whether they want to do that. But I think most everybody's going to cringe at the cost compared to last year for first off, but then when you look at the guarantee, I think they're going to want to keep their high levels of coverage up. If you're at 88 or 5, I don't think you want to set back just because it's so many dollars an acre.
Yeah, I have not asked Gary Schnitke just yet what the volatility from last week in those last 5 days, volatility in the options market for December corn and November soybeans really make a difference in what that 90 and 95% and the RP for that matter cost.
Yeah.
So a lot more than you might expect.
Yeah,
so.
The numbers are going to be shocking when they look at those at first, but then it's sort of a nice shock when you look at what your guarantees are going to be. We're in a lot better shape here with the prices up where we're at, that's for sure.
Yeah, the guarantees for income should be pretty good. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Wayne.
All right, thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with Allied Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Speaking of crop insurance and Gary Schnitke, I'll join him on Thursday morning of this week for a winter webinar, Farm Doc Daily, on crop insurance, the ARC PLC decision. It's free, and you can register for it right now at willag.org. Look for the placard that says Farm Doc Daily and then the registration link above that. Just click and get yourself registered, 11 a.m. on Thursday. Each Tuesday, we take a look at the agricultural energy markets. Dan O'Brien now joins us from Kansas State University, where he's an agricultural economist. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Yes, Todd. Nice to talk to you.
What have you been researching over the last week or so?
Well, the big issue, of course, in our thoughts is having to do with the profitability of ethanol production. And we've been on a run for a number of months where we haven't been that profitable. The January numbers, based on some models in your part of the world and between Iowa, well, representing Iowa and coming over and look and having an impact on what you're seeing there in Illinois too, showed in January about a 32-cent loss at ethanol plants. So I was really anxious to calculate what we'd estimate February would show, and looks like there's a little bit of improvement by about a dime at 22 under, what you've got is a break-even cost of about $1.80 a gallon, and then ethanol prices are at about $1.58, so that's higher than January. In January, we've got about $1.39. DDGs are higher too, at $233 per hundredweight. That's up from 217. So those are the positive sides. But on the other side, the input cost of corn has jumped up to about 535 thereabouts. It was about 497. And so in the net effect, a little bit better financial prospects for ethanol plants, but still showing about a 22-cent loss. And it's interesting to look at the number of plants there are. Going on to the Renewable Fuels Association site, counting up the number of plants that they are showing as functioning, is about 205 in November. At least by the numbers that I was working through, they had about 210. So some, you know, under financial duress. Some of the most efficient plants keep going and others don't. It's also interesting to look at the weekly ethanol production numbers, and just undeniable that the freezing temperatures had a hard short-term hit on ethanol production. It's interesting that the EIA weekly energy department numbers are only run through the 19th of February. So there's a there's another week to make up that we would normally have. And so I here's we move on into March. We get a more of a complete set of information and data on ethanol production stocks and all of that. It would be really I guess instructive to see how the ethanol industry came in those western areas, came out of that all that freeze damage that they had in Texas and other areas affected Kansas too to some degree, and to see how production got back online, et cetera. Still, again, when you look at the overall numbers, we at the best coming out of COVID-19 last year, we got up to about 87-88% of where we had been prior to that. And this one-time hit that, that's affecting the ethanol industry certainly isn't helping to isn't helping to get back on track from the damage of COVID last year and again the short-term issue that, that we've seen out in the Southwest in the last few weeks.
At best, you say, did that happen relatively recently, or was that sometime in the summer or fall?
Well, the our best run. Our highest looks like to me was last fall as we got up to back up to about 100,000 1,000 barrels per day corn usage on a on an annual rate of heading back towards the USDA estimates that of 5.0 billion bushels thereabouts, but and so we were seeing really a pretty good response and pretty steady. But one-time hit that in the ethanol production, dropping things about 30%, 33%, I think from 930 or so barrels, 930,000 barrels per day, down to about 645, 650, something like that. So about a one-third drop. So no doubt we'll recover from that pretty speedily once we can get the plants back up and running, et cetera. But still, it was a hit, and we'll see how that what the long term repercussions are of that.
Yeah, can we put that in context of what USDA has been thinking about corn use for ethanol? So the 2019-2020 crop year, not this current marketing year, but the previous one, at 4.852 billion bushels. The current one at 4.95, which I suppose is still above the previous one. And then for the coming year, they're at 5.2 billion bushels of corn. Can you make all of those numbers work properly in your head?
Well, can I make them work? Yes, it's possible. that's a very closeted, safe answer, but... Yeah, well, 5.2 billion bushels would be counting on the U.S. economy to do very well. And gasoline demand and blending opportunities to be there and not to falter. You're not counting on any droughts for the U.S. corn crop, which would raise prices all that much more. So I think in that type of a situation, you're with what the USDA came out of their February 19th grains and oilseed outlook presentation at their Outlook conference, yeah, they're optimistic that we'll be back up to 5.2 billion bushels, and that'd be the highest that we've had since, well, about 3 years ago, 2018-19. But the economy will have to work. We'll have to not have a drought, and there'll have to not be other issues that could slow down consumers' use of gasoline.
Can we switch topics a little bit and talk
Sure.
about crop insurance and acreage? I suspect you've been working through a lot of that for the state of Kansas.
Well, yes, and of course, out of that same conference, you saw the USDA's projection for corn acres, 92 million, and I think it's about 90 million, about a five or six million acre increase for soybeans. Also, Todd, I have to confess, those numbers I probably should not have been unexpected, but when I'd seen farmer surveys, you know, Farm Futures and others that had come out prior to that, they were saying corn up about 4% instead of this 2% that was there, and soybeans up also, but not quite as much, about half as much percentage-wise or less from what the USDA had said. So I guess I just am really looking forward to seeing what the prospective plantings report at the end of March will say on that last day of March when that thing comes out, just because that'll be an actual farmer survey of what they're thinking. And, you know, can we justify high soybean acres at $13, $14 soybeans? Sure. Can we justify high corn acres with, you know, tremendous prices like we just talked about, $5 plus? Sure, we can do that too. But I don't know that we can do both at the same time. and we'll see how farmers respond. And of course, they'll ultimately vote with their planters. But again, I'm pretty uncertain as to where those acreage numbers are going. I see what the USDA said, but I sure wonder what farmers are going to do.
What is the wheat crop in Kansas look like through the winter months, and is there any prospect for them to be enticed by the crop insurance price, either for corn or soybeans, to be more likely to tear that up and start over with a different crop?
I think the wheat crop, as it looks, the first issue is that as you get in the western half of the state, there are some areas where the wheat crop, it looked rough before the frost hit. So it was already at issue. And the reason it was at issue is because of dry conditions. So normally I'd say, well, yeah, gosh, you know, we could take out wheat and put in grain sorghum, put in corn, sunflower, something like that. But especially if freeze damage added to what was already there in terms of the dry conditions. But you know, you'll be farming almost completely by faith because that soil in those areas is pretty dry. So I think we're hoping for tremendous moisture to come and give us some options. It'd be a lot easier to tear out wheat. The other side of the coin is a lot easier to have failed wheat acres and plant another crop if wheat prices weren't also at $5 and $6. We're seeing a lot of wheat feeding going on because of the high corn prices, and of course grain sorghum's not even in the feeding equation hardly because of the export pull. So that also on March 31st we'll have a stocks report, and that for us in Kansas is going to be for all the western states, southwest central plains, where we can feed wheat in feedlot rations, it'll really be something to see what the trade-off has been between corn and wheat in terms of feed use. We're down a little bit for wheat exports, hard red winter wheat exports, but I wouldn't be surprised that decrease has been covered or more than covered by the increase in feeding. So that's kind of a western Corn Belt story that we're watching.
ECO an option at all for your producers?
My colleague Jenny Ift's going to talk about that in depth tomorrow. And is it an option? Yes. Is it costly? Yeah. So we need to balance the marginal cost, marginal benefit of going to those higher coverage levels, I guess, is maybe the most judicious thing I can say.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Dan O'Brien. He is with Kansas State Extension in Heston, Kansas. Hey, you know your crop insurance decisions are due, and there's help from Gary Schnitke coming up on Thursday of this week. I'll be there to moderate a webinar at 11 a.m. Central Time, and it's a free webinar. So if you've not registered for the FarmDoc webinar series, the winter series that's been taking place, you can still do that easily enough on our website at willag.org. Scroll down, and you'll find a placard that says FarmDoc webinars. Just above that, there's a link to register. You can get yourself registered for free. Gary Schnicke will go through crop insurance, the RP decision, what to do about ECO and SCO, and the ARC and PLC decision. Those decisions all have to be made by the 15th of this month, and I suspect you're already talking to your crop insurance folks and then, of course, to USDA about what you should do in the way of paperwork and getting all of that pulled together. But Gary will have a better idea of what it looks like and what the premiums will be, and he'll take you through that on Thursday of this week at 11 a.m. Central Time. Again, that's the Farm Doc Daily webinar series. This week we'll do some of those final crop insurance and ARC PLC decisions before the 15th day of March. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, sun is shining, and it's really been very nice here in the United States after just a blisteringly cold front that made its way through us. Just awful in parts of February, but March has been fantastic, even the end of February. What do we see for the next couple of weeks in March?
Well, at least through the rest of this week and into the early portions of next week, March continues to look like it'll come in like a lamb. There will be a little bit of a storm system that will actually bring some beneficial moisture, needed moisture, to portions of western Kansas, wheat areas there, as well as eastern Colorado, maybe the northern panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma. That system, though, will slide more towards the Gulf Coast, so that's going to mean the Midwest and Corn Belt going to be mild and dry, probably through Tuesday and next week. Now, after that, I do see the weather pattern getting a little more busy, getting colder, and chances of moisture will go up. But we've got a good week here where the weather looks good.
It's been dry again in Argentina. What are conditions like there?
Well, it's looking like that's going to continue. While there is going to be some of the western areas, western growing areas, getting a little bit of rain, as there will be some precipitation heading into some of the mountain terrain of the western areas of Argentina, it's going to have a hard time getting over those mountains. So Argentina, that trend, with just a couple of exceptions, is going to remain dry.
They are far behind in their harvesting in Mato Grosso and other parts of Brazil of soybeans and some of the first crop. Part of that's just the late planting season. However, it's been really wet. Will it remain so?
Well, it will in some areas. Now, this is going to be especially true in the southern end of Mato Grosso. We do expect that there will still be rains in all the growing areas. The heavier moisture, though, is going to be focused down towards those southern areas. So I think that's where the biggest delays are going to be. But it's going to be an active pattern in Brazil in those growing areas. So it's going to be kind of coming and going in terms of harvest. I think you're going to see an uneven harvest over the next week to 10 days down there.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.